Hello, listeners. My name is Alex.
And I'm Tatiana.
And this is the first episode of the Public Law Project's brand new podcast miniseries on public law and technology. In these next three episodes, we will take you on a journey through the different ways that public law and technology intersect and shape one another. Today's episode is focused on the government's use of computer systems to make decisions about people. We look at how this phenomenon is largely kept under wraps from the public and what we might do about it. The Public Law Project is an access to justice charity, and we exist to ensure people can challenge state decision-making when it goes wrong.
Today, we'll be talking to Professor Joe Tomlinson about automated decision-making in government and the frankly astonishing lack of transparency that accompanies it. Automated decision-making is one of those big umbrella terms. When we use the term today on the podcast, we're basically talking about situations where government uses a computerized system of some kind to help it make decisions. Decisions like whether a person should get a visa to enter the country or receive a housing benefit. Traditionally, these decisions have been made by human officials employed by the government. The fact that computers now make some of these decisions is an important change in how our government works, and it also raises some big problems with transparency. First, government doesn't always advertise the fact that a computer is involved in making the decision. A person affected might quite reasonably expect that it was a human being who took the decision, but increasingly, this isn't always the case. Second, it can be much harder to understand why and how a computer makes the decision it did. Often, we can't see the factors that the computer uses in making its decision, and it can't give reasons in the way a human decision maker can. This is sometimes called the black box problem. These questions about how we achieve better transparency around these systems is one of the reasons why we have Joe on the podcast today.
Joe is Professor of Public Law at the University of York. He is also a member of the academic panel at Blackstone Chambers, an Associate Fellow of the Public Law Project, and co-chair of the academic panel of the Administrative Justice Council. From 2017 to 2021, he was Research Director at the Public Law Project. And in early 2022, he and Jack Maxwell published a book called Experiments in Automating Immigration Systems.
In short, Joe is pretty much the perfect person to discuss government automation, opacity, and especially some of the stories that he has collected around people's experiences with these automated systems.
Good morning, Joe, and welcome to the pod.
Thank you very much for having me.
Joe, I was wondering if we could begin by you telling us how you came to write this book and why you wrote it.
Sure. So with my work at PLP, and in particular with Jack, at the time, we were looking at different automated systems across government. And we were trying to figure out what kinds of systems were being used and what kind of impacts those systems were having. And in particular, were they impacting people who are disadvantaged in society in particular ways? So we started to look across government, and it became quickly apparent that a really important site for experimenting with technology is the Home Office, and in particular, the immigration system. Now, there's potentially lots of reasons for that. Some people might say that because migrants are in a position of political disadvantage within the system, government has a little bit more room to try new kinds of technologies on that population. However, there's just a lot of incentives in the system for the Home Office to try to use more technology in the migration system, both to speed up decision-making, but to also drive down costs. So we saw there was lots of this kind of stuff happening. There'd not been much writing on it. So we tried to pull together what we knew about what was going on, but also try to offer an analysis of some of the problems that we were seeing arise.
It is my understanding that the Home Office doesn't exactly want people to know about the use of these systems. It doesn't advertise its use of them. And so how did you find out about some of them to kind of make them an important part of the book?
It's a really, really good question. The reality is we don't know about most of the automation that's going on in immigration systems. That would be my guess. So in terms of how we're learning about automated systems, there's a variety of ways. We're seeing journalists and academics and charities make FOI requests. That, for anybody who's ever made an FOI request, is a struggle, and you have to put lots and lots of hours in to get anywhere with it. We're seeing watchdogs, inspectorates, etc., look at decision-making systems, and then sometimes they will mention, oh, this is automated now. And then sometimes you see things just go spectacularly wrong. And when things go really, really wrong, usually a committee gets involved or somebody comes in to check what's happening. And in their reports and in their processes, usually automation will be drawn out. So what we have is essentially a very opaque digital transformation going on in the Home Office, in the immigration system. And every now and again, bits of information leak out, whether that's just by people trying to find out what's going on or by problems arising and automation falling out through those sort of investigatory accountability processes. But as I said, the reality is we probably know the tip of the iceberg in terms of what's going on in this system. And in the coming years, we're going to see much more of this kind of digital development.
When I think about things going spectacularly wrong, what comes to mind is right now Australia's Royal Commission on the robo-debt scandal, where thousands and thousands of those decisions have been found to be invalid. What else kind of comes to mind when you think about things going wrong?
Yes, there's lots of examples, particularly in the migration system in the UK. There's an increasing number of examples. There's also examples outside of the migration system. So probably the most well-known example of something going wrong is in relation to the A-levels algorithm during the pandemic. And there was a lot of public outcry in relation to that system. But in terms of the migration system, there's been a range of problematic systems. So for instance, the Home Office is currently operating an automated system that assesses whether marriages should be flagged as potential sham marriages. That's assessing risk on the basis of a number of criteria, only a few of which we know, and it seems to be targeting or having an effect on certain populations. Another example would be a few years ago in relation to English language testing. There was a huge scandal, it's still ongoing, where because the Home Office relied on an automated voice recognition system to test whether students were cheating their English language tests to be able to study in the UK, thousands of thousands of students had their studies suspended. Some people were detained and deported. There was over 14,000 cases that's gone through the justice system in relation to that scandal. So not only is it a huge effect on that population who are affected by that faulty algorithmic system, but it's also a huge impact on the taxpayer who's obviously funded this mismanagement at the front end of the system, but then has also had to essentially fund the justice system to deal with this massive amount of complaints as well.
Joe, we've spoken quite a lot about automation in immigration systems, and that, of course, is the subject of your book. Acknowledging that, of course, opacity is a real problem in this area and we don't know the full scale of government automation, perhaps you could nonetheless kind of give listeners a bit of a sense of what is the scope of government automation more generally beyond just immigration.
It's difficult really to get a good grasp on what's going on across the board. But there are some things that I would just highlight from my research. One is there seems to be, to some extent, a little bit of detachment between the conversation around AI government and what's actually happening on the ground. So much of the conversations that you see in academia or in the press are about sort of machine learning algorithms, self-learning algorithms, complex AI. So the conversation is often about those kinds of complex system. And those kinds of systems for lots of interesting questions about what their impact's going to be, whether they're good or bad for government, whether they're lawful or unlawful in different ways. So it's really interesting questions. But the reality is that in terms of people being processed by algorithms, say in a migration system or in a welfare system, the algorithms that are being used there are very, very simple. They're less self-learning algorithms and more if X, then Y, and produce a response. But they're automating very simple functions. And still, in those kinds of systems, we're seeing things go quite wrong on some occasions. Some of them work fairly well, but some of them have a capacity still to go quite wrong. So it's difficult to say about the exact scope of the use of automation across government, but I think we often sort of have higher expectations of what's going on in government. But that's not to say what, even though the systems that we are seeing are more simple, that's not to say not having a profound effect on people's experience of government.
Yes, and perhaps there's a sense that when it comes to government automation, we shouldn't be running before we can walk. Even the simpler systems are going wrong. Maybe we should put the brakes on when it comes to deploying more complex systems.
Absolutely. If you're taking a human decision-making system and turning it into an automated system, it's really easy to underestimate the sheer fundamental change in that transition. And we are seeing lots of problems with some of the most simple systems.
I'm really struck by this invisibility point. You get a bad decision from the government, and probably your first thought is not that an algorithm made it. Do you have any kind of thoughts on that?
Everybody who's listening to this podcast will have been processed by a government algorithm at some point, probably multiple times in last year alone. So even in terms of things like security services, they will use algorithms all the time to sift through data. All our data will be in that net that they're sifting through. So, and even in more local context, maybe NHS interactions, algorithms are everywhere around us. So this is not a case of certain people being processed and certain other people being not. Everybody's being processed by government algorithms these days. However, certain populations, particularly disadvantaged populations, might find that they're processed more regularly and frequently and more aggressively than others. In terms of the invisibility aspects of this, yeah, it's invisible to most people. Most people won't realize they're going through an algorithmic system, but will have passed through multiple. And in a case where you've had a really negative experience with an algorithmic systems, so in a case, for instance, where you're getting married and enforcement officials storm in and disrupt your wedding ceremony and start asking you questions about whether your marriage is legitimate, your first thought is not necessarily going to be, oh, this will be an algorithm that's processed me and put me into a certain risk category, and I'm therefore at greater risk of being over-policed on this particular front. Your first thought is probably going to be something along the lines of somebody's maybe dobbed me in or something like that. So most people who've gone through algorithms are not going to be clear about the fact they've gone through algorithms. But particularly for people who've had very bad experiences resulting from algorithms, not necessarily going to be clear to them that they've been processed by an algorithm until months after, or even ever after their negative interactions.
I think it's only fair to acknowledge that the government is making some moves to increase the level of transparency in its use of automated systems. And it has introduced something it's calling the Algorithmic Transparency Standard. Could you perhaps summarise that for listeners and perhaps give your view on the Algorithmic Transparency Standard?
I would say the Transparency Standard is probably the softest possible form of regulation that we could expect around algorithmic transparency. And so it's essentially a register where public authorities have the option to disclose what they're doing. Now, they're gently encouraged to do so. Then they can share information about the automated systems they're operating and how they work. And the idea is that the public should be able to go onto a website on gov.uk and have a look at the kinds of automated systems that are being operated. I say it's the softest possible form of regulation because it's not compulsory. It doesn't have a legislative underpinning. It's essentially a kind of government guidance framework. And from what we've seen of the standard in operation so far, most government departments are either not taking it seriously, they've not noticed. In any event, what's on there is relatively benign and uninteresting stuff. So the challenge is that whilst there's some systems that have been put onto the register, and we've got a little bit of insight from what's been put onto the register, the really important case studies are the ones where they're on the boundary between, you know, should automation be used in this system or not? Or is this system having a good effect or a bad effect? The more controversial applications of automation are the ones that we are all interested in. And that's not to say we should just focus on those, but those are the ones where transparency really matters. And those are the ones where the standard doesn't really have any bite. So it's definitely a tricky problem managing transparency around this for government, but it's pretty weak what they've done so far.
I think last time I checked, there were just 6 reports published on that government website. And as you say, none of them were reports really about these very high impact, high stakes systems.
Yeah, some were pretty low stakes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So let's maybe get into some of the reasons that government gives for non-disclosure, for keeping these systems opaque. One of the sort of reasons that we hear at Public Law Project is that if government did make more information available, then people would change their behaviour in order to sort of game the system or to get a more favourable decision. What do you think about that line of reasoning?
Yeah, it's certainly a line of reasoning that you see often, particularly in response to FOI requests where you try to get more information on how these systems are working. So it's certainly an excuse that is being used widely, but in my view, it's an overused excuse. So some things you can't game. So for instance, your ethnic identity, you can't game. Features of people that the systems will be processing that are just incapable of being gamed. So some things you can't game. In relation to other systems, if you're trying to effectively game the algorithm, you need to, or would have to, coordinate with hundreds, if not thousands of people to vet the functioning of the algorithm. So that the reality is that any system, algorithmic or otherwise, has a risk of being gamed. And it's important that the government is alert to that risk in systems that it operates, but it shouldn't overstate it. And the kind of reasoning that we're seeing coming out of government all too often, in my view, is that they don't really get into the weeds of, is this something we can disclose? And is there a genuine risk of gaming in reality? Rather, we're just seeing blanket excuses of, we're not going to give you this information because there's a risk of gaming, and that seems to be the end of the analysis. So what we really need to see is less of those kind of blanket excuses and much more detailed analysis about, is there a realistic chance of gaming?
Yeah, totally. I would agree with that. There are other reasons, though, as well, that government gives for non-disclosure. One of them is that the public wouldn't be able to understand the code or the model if it was disclosed. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, so there's a huge debate on this about whether an explanation is really what you want. You know, so do you actually want to know what's going on and how helpful is that going to be for the public? I'm inherently skeptical of citizens being told you can't possibly understand this. You should not be too interested in it, or we can't give you it because you won't understand it. So I'm just inherently skeptical of that kind of position. But more fundamentally, from a legal point of view, I think that's highly problematic. It's a really simple principle that citizens should be able to analyze the decisions being made against them and test whether they're lawful through a legal challenge. And unless citizens have access to basic information about the decisions being made about them or how decisions are being made about them, it's very, very difficult to undertake that kind of analysis and to think about potentially bringing a legal challenge. And whilst that might seem a problem for the individuals on the end of particular systems, it's a much more fundamental rule of law problem insofar as these systems need to be legally compliant. That is an obvious point to make, but the way that we make sure they're legally compliant is that they're exposed to legal challenge in the same way the rest of government is. And so if government doesn't share that kind of information, it doesn't disclose that kind of information, it can present a genuine, practical rule of law challenge for automated systems.
I think there's an interesting point to make as well around the fact that a lot of these arguments could be made where government uses a policy to make a decision. So this risk of gaming applies as well, where it's a policy that's used, potentially even the idea that it's difficult to understand, a complicated technical policy could also apply. What do you think about the idea that there should be no sort of difference in the principles and level of transparency where a computer's used compared to when a policy's used?
I think it's certainly the case that what we need to see in terms of legal analysis in this context is a close and kept careful interrogation of how our existing principles of law apply in this new digital space. And one of the problems that we have here is that we have a huge amount of legal uncertainty. So we've not seen really clear judgments on points of principle around automated systems. So there's a huge amount of legal uncertainty. That makes things difficult for claimants. They have to take on a lot of legal risk if they try to mount a challenge. It gives government also, if we're being cynical about this, it gives government room to potentially hide behind interesting legal arguments and not disclose things. And we've really not seen those kinds of arguments tested in court. So there are big questions around those kinds of questions that the courts have to resolve, which they've not had the opportunity to do yet. I do think as a side note to this, that how the courts respond to those kinds of questions in the next 10 to 20 years is going to be something that really does shape the nature of public law in this century. So these are really big questions the courts have to grapple with. I think they need to be brave in responding to these kinds of questions and not shying away from them and just think that's government technology. We don't quite know how that works. We need to stay away from them. So there's lots of interesting questions like this that absolutely will need to get resolved. And it's not very satisfactory for us all to be in this place where there's loads and loads of legal uncertainty, which is absolutely where we are now.
It sounds like we can't rely on government necessarily to be transparent on its own or to achieve the necessary level of transparency on its own. And you've said that courts have a role to play. But can listeners do anything to help ensure transparency in government use of these systems?
Yes, so I think everybody has some role to play in this. So if you're a member of the public and you feel like you've been affected by one of these systems or somebody you know has been affected by one of these systems, there are lots of organisations, including obviously the Public Law Project, who are interested in these systems and are looking at them closely. So do get in touch with organisations. One of the big challenges for organisations like the Public Law Project trying to do this work is that they're trying to find out where these kinds of systems are affecting people. So that kind of contact is always appreciated. So do reach out to organisations. And if you're a lawyer and you're listening to this, I guess the message I would try to give you is if you see this kind of thing in practice, in your day-to-day practice, if you think there's an algorithm operating, take a close look at it. Don't be scared of the technology. There are obviously lots of big questions around this, but do flag it. Do look at it closely and do be willing to challenge these kinds of systems. They can, I think, appear to people who are used to dealing with human decision-making systems, more traditional government systems. They can appear at first quite intimidating as a prospect. So it's really incumbent on lawyers, I think, to move past that sense of that this is a technical system and I don't quite understand it, and to try to wrestle with these systems the way they would other systems.
In our chat, we've kind of focused on the UK, but I'd be interested to hear, do you think other countries doing this, or is this unique to the United Kingdom? And if other countries are using automated systems, are they using it in better ways than we are?
Yeah, so it's absolutely not unique to the UK. We're seeing lots of countries adopt these technologies. The incentives that the Home Office and other departments in the UK have to adopt these kind of technologies, potentially lower costs, increased speed, etc., they apply across borders. So we're seeing lots of countries adopt this kind of technology in all kinds of areas of government. Some countries have gone very far. So if you take China as an example of that, they have very integrated automated welfare systems. Other countries are very much like the UK. It's very difficult to know what's going on. So internationally, this is a big, big trend. Difficult to say who's doing it better and who's doing it worse at the moment. So certain countries such as China are taking a very aggressive approach to the use of automation in government. Other countries, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, etc., are using automation, but very much in the same way as the UK. It's very difficult to get a good grip on what's going on. Potentially one of the most interesting points of differentiation is that we're starting to see legislative initiatives in some countries and also in some states within countries. So it's really important that we keep an eye out for if any country is really going to take a hold of this problem and say, here's an overall solution to this problem of transparency, and try to take the lead on doing automation and transparency well.
Joe, now it's time to plug this great book we've been talking about. So why should people read it and where can they find it?
So the book is Experiments in Automating Immigration Systems. It was published by Bristol University Press. It's meant to be a short and accessible primer for anybody who wants to understand the use of automation in the UK immigration system. The best place to buy it is Bristol University Press, but you can also buy it on lots of online bookshops.
Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast, Joe. Now, if people want to find out more about you and your work, where can they find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Joe P. Tomlinson. I also have a university profile page where all my research is linked.
Fantastic.
Joe, Alex, it was such a pleasure to speak to you both today about this topic that is close to all of our hearts. The work of Public Law Project dovetails quite nicely with all of Joe's fantastic work and research in this area. And one of Public Law Project's big goals is to improve the transparency of automated systems. To this end, we have just launched the Tracking Automated Government Register, and we would really love for listeners to check it out. The register is a database of all the automated tools that we are currently aware of in use by the UK government. It's publicly available, and we hope that it's straightforward and easy to understand. You can also add to the register if you know of other systems that are not currently included. So far, we've collected over 40 examples, but as Joe has so brilliantly explained today, opacity is a huge problem in this area, and we are sure that there are many, many more systems that we don't yet know about. Our hope with the TAG register is that if government won't be transparent on its own, then in the meantime, it will serve as a source of information for affected people. And it might also gently encourage government to publish more of its own information about these automated systems. You can find the TAG register on Public Law Project's website, and we will put a link in the show notes. So all that remains to say is thank you so much again, everyone, for listening, and huge, huge thanks to Professor Joe Tomlinson for being on Public Law Project's first ever podcast episode.
Thanks so much for having me.
The Public Law Project is an access to justice charity, and we exist to ensure people can challenge state decision-making when it goes wrong. And this is the first episode of the Public Law Project's brand new podcast miniseries on public law and technology.